This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Joined in studio by the Chief Medical Officer of the South African Football Association, SAFA, Thulani Ngwenya, and top referee on the line, Victor Gomez. I see him there already. To talk to us about representing South Africa at the 2022. I mean, you know, just reading this is just pride in itself. Let me read it because I've got Thulani here and Victor on the line already. And I mean, as a South African, and when Thulani walked in, I actually showed him that I came prepared.
Yes.
I came prepared. Thulani, yes. What am I wearing?
The South African jersey.
And
Bafana, Bafana.
And do you know which one? Bafana. Do you know which one this was, bro?
It's the Adidas. So it's like
way back,
way back.
Yes, yeah. Way back, 2010.
So yeah, you know? Around that time.
Yes,
yeah.
This is it. This yeah. is it. Around that time,
of course.
Too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that means that you've been a patriot.
I went into the shelf today, and I was
archives.
Like, yeah, and I was like. Park Tanzania, park the Zimbabwean one, park the Brazil one, park the Argentinian one, yes. park the, you know, and then there were a few South African ones, and I said, let me take the old one.
Bafana, Bafana.
Yes, the proper Bafana.
Yes.
When they were still scoring goals. When they were still scoring goals. Well, yeah. Well, we've got them in studio and on the line. And of course, they are representing South Africa at the 2022 FIFA World Cup, which will take place from the 21st of November, 18th December in Qatar. Dr. Ngwenya has been appointed as the official doping officer for this year's Soccer World Cup, while top South African referee Victor Gomez will represent Mzansi at the tournament along with assistant referee Zakhele Siwela. We will speak to their areas of expertise, Bafana's inability to qualify, and about the lack of transformation within SAFA. We'll get to all of these. Gomez is traveling, and I think that's why he's not in studio today. He would otherwise be here, but he's traveling to Morocco tomorrow for the 2022 CAF Championship League final on the 30th of May. And of course, he will be in that. Of course, you know, I just want you to leave your tickets here as well, just some of those tickets. Let's welcome Victor Gomez to the conversation. Victor, welcome to the conversation.
A very good evening, and good evening to the doctor and to all your listeners. It's my honor and privilege to be on your show.
Well, let's talk about Morocco first. You know, let's just start there. You know, you're the one who's traveling, and I think traveling tomorrow, right?
That's correct, yes.
So let's talk about that and you know, reasons for the traveling, how that came about, when you knew, how important that is. Let's start there.
Yeah, first of all, we get our appointment via email. So what we call a CMS system, it sends an email out to all the delegates for the game. Obviously, there's referees, there's general coordinators, there's match commissioners, there's doctors and media officers. So once that goes out, everybody gets an email, and you get told that you're on the game, and you see the list, you see who's your team, and the preparations continue from there.
Mm. So when did you get yours?
I got it a few days ago. It must have been on Monday. I can't remember. It was just recently. I think it was on Monday.
They don't let you know too far ahead, do they? Because I mean, obviously, it's one game. It's because you wouldn't know, in essence, who's in the final, where the final is, and stuff like that. So in essence, they watch what happens in the games, and then obviously, when they know what's going on in the final, then they would decide. You know what to do.
Yeah, sure, that's obviously correct. And being the final, they obviously have to take all the considerations into consideration and decide who would be fit to officiate the match.
There's a man who's coaching Al Ahly, he says he was once one of your biggest critics, and now he's one of the those who believes you're one of the best referees, if not on the African continent, well, in the world. He coaches Al Ahly. You know who I'm talking about.
No, I'm not sure. Maybe you can guide me.
Absolutely. Well, he's a little disappointed they're playing in Morocco. They're playing the final in Morocco, but he has you in high regard. Do you know why?
No, fill me in so that I'm aware of what's going on.
I'll fill you in. Let's join here in studio. Thulani, you don't look the 38 that you are. You tell me you're 38 years old. You obviously, there's something that's going on, you know, doping material that works. anti-aging doping material.
Good evening, Denzel. Good evening to all your listeners, and good evening to Malume on the other side, as we affectionately call each other, Malume. I am 38. I'm a sports physician, so I look the part. So yeah, you may actually, when I'm with the team, a lot of people would actually think that I'm a player, but I'm not a player, but I'm a sports physician. But yeah, I look the part. I'm a sports physician, so I need to actually look the part.
Okay. Victor, let's correct something, Victor.
Yes, sir.
It's not Gomez as I'm looking at the pronunciation.
No, it is. I mean, if you're Portuguese, it's Gomes. If it's in English, it's Gomez. You know, I really don't take much offense to anything. As long as people call me, I'm happy. It doesn't bother me. Really.
Let's deal with the official and the pronunciation that you prefer. Gomes is Portuguese,
Gomez,
right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
Gomez would be what? Gomez would be Brazilian, Argentinian?
Yeah, with a Z, it's more towards Mexico, and with the S, it's Portuguese. My parents are from the little island of Madeira, the same city as what Cristiano Ronaldo comes from.
That's exactly it. So Gomez would be around those parts. Brazil, well, you know, not bad football-playing countries at all. You know, Gomes, Victor Gomes.
Yeah, it's in our blood.
Okay, so let's continue the conversation here, Thulani. How did you get to this? What makes you become involved in the game in the first place? I mean, studying the medical part of it is one thing.
Yeah.
You know, quite a few people will do that.
Yeah.
Attaching yourself to a sport is something else.
100%.
When do you do this? How does this become something that you do?
Okay. So with me, my story is quite long, but I just try and summarize. I grew up playing football, and I've been a footballer myself, but at a junior level. I've played at a provincial level. And then there came a time when I was actually selected to play for the development of one of the biggest teams in South Africa. But I decided, no, I don't want to go to that development. I want to focus on football because my priority was to be a doctor. Fast forward, then I was a doctor, and after qualifying as a doctor, I decided actually that I want to come to sport. So I came to SAFA in 2012. I started with the under 17 girls national team when Coach Cheryl Borders was the coach. Mm. So there I came in because they needed a doctor, and then that's how I actually came
in. So what role are you playing then?
I was just a team doctor for the under 17 girls.
Right.
So I was a doctor, qualified doctor, but I played a role of just being a team doctor.
Yeah.
Now, Coach Cheryl was promoted to under 20 girls, and she actually went with me. I went with the under 20s. And when I got to the under 20s, we were in camp at the same time with Banyana. Mm. Banyana did not have a team doctor on first day. On first day, we do medicals. Mm. So I needed then to do medicals for Banyana on that day. So on that day, then there was also Coach Sheikhs Mashaba, who was a technical advisor to the coach of Banyana. And at that time, that was around the 2012 time. Then Coach Sheikhs was appointed to under 17 boys. When he was at the under 17 boys coach, and they didn't have a doctor, Coach Sheikhs then asked he remembers a young boy from Banyana who came, and can we bring that young boy in? Mm. And that young boy went there, and I worked with Coach Sheikhs. He liked how I work. He was promoted to under 20 boys, and when he went to the under 20 boys, he took his entire technical team to the under 20. Andy Boys. And when we won and qualified for the AFCON under 20, Coach Shakes was appointed to be at Bafana. Surprisingly, Coach Shakes took the entire technical staff, your Coach Thabo Sinong, your Lucky Shiburi, to Bafana. Mm. And that's how I actually broke through to actually being at Bafana 2014. So I've been with Bafana since 2014. And then it fast forward, it happened that Safa needed this chief medical officer.
But this is as team doctor.
Yes, as team. These are happening. This is I come in only as team doctor.
Yes.
When they only on camp basis.
Right.
So I was coming in on camp basis. But then there was a time when Safa needed to have a chief medical officer. That was in 2015. And the then CEO, Mr. Mambo, called me to say, are you interested in the post? Because we have seen your work. And he said, I must bring my documents. And I gave my documents. And a mini interview happened. It was more like a conversation for me because that's how things happened for me. And that's how I was then appointed to be the chief medical officer of South African Football 2015. And yeah, the rest is easy.
I'm scheduled for a break right now, but I want to ask you, because I have so many other questions.
Yeah.
How does the doping element begin to enter your space?
Okay. So as a sports and exercise physician, we do almost everything
right.
that has to do with football. As a doping control officer, I started being appointed as a doping control officer for CAF.
Right.
And I had to attend a workshop that the CAF...
Is this different from what you would normally be doing as a medic in the football space?
Yeah, it's slightly different because you have to undergo some sort
of
But
would
training.
You have been doing it as the medic when you were there already? Was it part of the responsibility to also...
Nah.
Okay.
No, we would actually liaise with South African Institute of Drug Free Sport, which is SAIDS,
right.
In South Africa, who's actually responsible for doping control in South Africa. And they've got their own doping control officers. But we would liaise with them when they actually have to come in and do doping control. But we are not doing it every time. It was not in my space up until I did training with CAF some years ago. That's how I actually became in the panel, came into the panel of doping control officer for CAF. And then CAF started appointing me for the Confederations games and for the Champions League games that were playing in South Africa. They liked what I was doing. And then from there, fast forward, I was appointed to be doping control officer in the AFCON now that happened in Cameroon. I was in Bafosa. And then fast forward.
Did you see a South African team there?
Yes, I did. It was Victor Gomes. We were together there. and Siwela. So yes, I saw a South African team.
Let's take a break on that. Victor, I'm with you next.
Denzel Taylor on Power 98.7.
It's 24 minutes past the hour. I am in conversation, of course, with Thulani Ngwenya and Victor Gomes, of course, and it's not Gomez, but of course he doesn't. If you get the surname right, he'll give you to you as Victor Gomes on the line to talk about representing South Africa at the 2022 FIFA World Cup, which will take place from 21 November to 18 December in Qatar. But of course, Dr. Gomes also heads off to Morocco tomorrow for the 2022 CAF Championship League final on the 30th of May, which is in a few days' time. Victor, how big a deal is this?
If you just allow me, before you answer your question, sure. I just wanted to say that Dr. Nguyen's contribution to the refereeing department as well has been extensive, and he's assisted me a lot of times, and I think it's just important for the listeners to know that his commitment to football and football as a lover, I mean, has been really, and we appreciate it, Doctor. So, yeah, I needed to say that.
Thanks, Malume.
Was that the paid-for ad that you know, that slips in?
No, but it's the truth. It is the truth.
I'm waiting for my $200.
Absolutely. Victor,
yeah,
how big a deal, man? It must be an absolute big deal. I mean, even if you play it down, you know, and you say, well, you know, I've done this and I've done that. This must be huge anyway, you know. So let's talk about that.
No, of course it's huge. I mean, it's a Champions League final. It's actually the one that I don't have under my belt. So I'm really looking forward to this. I've been working hard for it. And it's a Champions League final. It's basically, I would consider it's, if not the second highest match you can referee on the continent. Yeah, it's, I mean, after AFCON final, then Champions League final. It's a big deal.
When you say it's a big deal and there's something that's even more attainable, what would be more attainable than this? I mean, would it be, you know, in the FIFA games, would it be a FIFA final? What would be something else that you, like you said, you didn't have it on your belt yet? You're going to have it now. You'll do us proud. But what then, of course, is next for you then on the belt, a notch on the belt? What is it? Is it something in regards to the FIFA games, FIFA World Cup?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you just consider that in Africa, possibly the highest game that you could referee would be an AFCON final.
Yeah, this is it, right?
Yeah, I've done that. And then you can possibly have a Super Cup final, which is the Confederation CC winners versus CL winners. I've done that already. Now it's Champions League, and after Champions League, it's Confederations Cup. Mm-hmm. So these are, just as players aspire to go to finals, so do we referees. We also aspire to get finals. I mean, everybody wants to be in the final. Mm-hmm. And it's a lifelong commitment. It comes down to being a referee, not only on, but also off the field of play.
It's got nothing to do with the money.
No, I'm grateful to the man upstairs that it has absolutely everything except the money to do with it. So that makes my life easier.
Well, I raised that too because I was going to say to you, assuming that, you know, that the financial part of it would not be that great, but the reward of you know, doing it is rates so much more.
I'm from the school that you need to respect money. We all need money to survive. We all need money to live. But it comes a time in life where you respect money and you know its value. Mm. And you live life for other values and not for the love of money. Mm. And I've always, you know, when people say when a man who has no price cannot be bought. And then you start living your life and doing things not for the love of money. Mm. And I think then it starts showing in all professions and in all industries.
Let's talk about the finances, you know, because obviously you say it is important. And when you're refereeing in general, obviously you, I'm not sure how referees get paid. Is it, you know, like through a per game kind of situation? Is there a list of referees that get paid, you know, on average per month? Is there a monthly kind of stipend? I don't know anything about salaries in this regard. So guide me. How do you make your money as a referee?
So I wouldn't like to get into the debate of radio presenters' salaries and stuff, but I will guide you slightly in a good direction. I'll guide you in a good direction. I stand to be corrected, but I think we are the best paid referees in, if not the best, we are probably the second best paid referees in the Southern Hemisphere from a local perspective.
Right.
Then we are, once we get to CAF level, we are remunerated. I think we have a list of 20 referees on the elite panel, mm-hmm. which are paid by CAF a monthly stipend.
Oh, right.
And we are also paid a match fee that we participate in our games. And then once we go to FIFA, it's also the same protocol. So it's like a match fee that we get paid for.
Okay, let's go back to the beginning then. What's the journey that you took? Because here we are talking about FIFA games, we're talking about CAF finals, we're talking about, you know, it's not something small to write home about. This is massive, and I'm talking to two South Africans that are both heading out into the FIFA World Cup space and, you know, occupying a huge kind of space on the African continent as well. People that, you know, obviously the institutions on the continent and the world have looked at, people that they've looked at and said, these people carry the kind of quality that we would want to see at international games. That's huge in itself. And it differentiates between what we just normally would view and understand for normal league matches. This is a different kind of category. What's your journey been? And what's it been like?
Yeah, it's been, you know, people think that being a referee is just you get your whistle, you put your shirt on and you go and you run around and you go through the ladder of life or the steps of refereeing. Mm. And it's not, as I said earlier, refereeing is a lifelong commitment. Dr. Ngwenya will tell you that when you're involved with football, it's many sacrifices. I recall 1 year we had about 15 weddings in the family and I think I only attended three. Mm. And my wife and the kids had to go alone, you know. It's lots of sacrifices. It's weekends away. It's most of the time family gatherings and everything. You're always away. And, yeah, so it starts off at local level on a Sunday and a Saturday morning. You ref the whole day. You do from under sevens, under eights, under nines, and it goes up all the way to Colts in those days. And you just go through the channels. I mean, as you start progressing and getting better, you then get assessors who watch your games and give you reports, and it goes to SAFA. Then you go into the SAB League, and you go into the then old Vodacom League in my time, and and you go through the all the ranks of the SAFA structures. And then once you get to the SAFA structure,
it's commitment, really.
Yeah, it's you know what? It's got to be a passion. It's really a passion that's got to drive you.
Mm. And then just continue with your journey.
So you want to get to the highest, which is the PSL. You then get recommended for FIFA after refereeing 2 years in your highest league, which is PSL. You then have you stand a chance of going for FIFA. You get recommended. Once you go to FIFA, then you got to do well in your region, COSAFA. Once you do well in your region, then you get selected for CAF and you start the Elite A and Elite B course. And once you start going through that, and obviously this is all rapid, but it takes time. And then they choose, like now what we have, the Elite 20 guys, the top 20 guys. And then from there, then there's World Cup candidates. Then you become a World Cup candidate. And it's like I've said to people, you can never go to a World Cup, I'd say, before 8 years, because you need to go through all those steps. You need to go through those junior tournaments. You need to be selected. You need to be seen. And you need to just keep working. And I think it's just literally a long journey.
Mm. Is there an association that looks after referees?
Yes, it's thanks to SAFA that I have this opportunity of representing our country at the FIFA World Cup, because SAFA is a member association, and SAFA send us every year on course. We also have courses through SAFA, which they do at lower level. They do integrity courses. They do we do fitness tests and stuff. We do. We do video courses, theoretical, as they say. And then from there we go to CAF, and then CAF give us courses as well. We also have courses. And then once we go under the umbrella of FIFA, we also go on FIFA courses. For example, on the 12th, 13th and 14th of next month, I will be on a FIFA course, which is for all World Cup candidates.
Okay. I'm going to go to the line, Thulani and Victor. Let's just go to Owen. Owen in Brits, you've been listening to the conversation so far.
Yes. Actually, my question is directed to Victor Gomez.
Right. He's listening.
Yes. We are a superb footballing nation. Mm. That's my view. And we are not recognized globally because of our administration, which is SAFA. Then he concurred with me when I say if right people could be placed on right positions, Bafana could do well globally. We could be recognized as one of the powerhouse of football globally, because we play a similar football with Brazil. Actually, in my view, we surpass Brazil. But because of the administration that we have, it is not recognized, and it trickles into our demise.
Okay, okay, does he concur, Owen? Victor, I'm not sure how much of that you can actually answer, but give it a go.
Good evening, Owen. Thanks for your question. Look, I come from the school where we this is a collective issue. We are fighting for one umbrella, which is our flag, our South African flag. And I think collectively we can all do better together. And it's easy to sit and point fingers and try and find faults and whatever. But the glass, I look at the glass always half full and half empty. We look and we stand. We now have two members from a refereeing point of view that will be at the World Cup, which is from South Africa. And we have a doctor who will be at the World Cup from South Africa. So I think, yes, we can maybe in terms of team, we could do better.
But we are there. And why do we look at things negatively? So I think we'll always find fault if you look for fault. And if you say that the glass is half full, then you'll always find that the glass is half full. So this is my opinion and this is how I view it. It's what can we do better for our country?
Owen, I'm going to put your question to Lani as well. Tulani?
Thanks, Owen. Actually, I concur with Victor that it is our responsibility as a collective. If I actually look at the administration right now at SAFA, I go to the office and we've got younger people, we've got former athletes that used to play, like your COO was a former Banyana player, we've got your Amanda that was a former Banyana player, and we've got a young CEO, Advocate Teboho Mtlante. It's work in progress, and I think we are on the right direction, and hopefully it can happen overnight, but it's a process, so we need to be patient, and hopefully with this global recognition for some of the administrators, it means that we are good, it means that we are on the right track. Hopefully it's going to actually show off with also our senior national team.
Let's go to Molele King.
Thanks. A brilliant show as always. My question is, it's not just only to Malume and Victor, it's also to Tulani as well. The first one would be with the issue regarding the language barrier. You might find that maybe you'll be referring at the whereby both teams are French-speaking, and do you have to fight? Obviously, you have to command the game, and so do you also do your own classes, or do you take classes to ensure that maybe if you make instructions, it is imperative that it has to be in French, those kind of, that language barrier. And then the second one is also that the elephant in the room. We know now, Denzel, that, you know, all this betting streaming and betting companies, they are very sophisticated
syndicates,
nowadays.
Yes.
Yeah, they would love to like influence games, and so obviously they'll find sophisticated means to ensure that they try to persuade our refugees. I just want to check from them, from their perspective, has there been any such attempts or has there been heard of any such? Because we can't just avoid them. We know how persuasive these guys are, and they're still prevalent as well. So yeah, those are my questions to both your panels.
Molele Lekeng, thank you so much. Let's start with you. Tulani, you are in studio. You're easy to get. Let's start here.
Bonsoir, monsieur. That's French, meaning good evenings. So I've been also trying to do a little bit of French, because when you travel in Africa, especially in West Africa, they don't compromise with their French. And when I was in Cameroon, I had some challenges. But what is good is that KEF gives you an interpreter, someone that will actually help you with interpretation, and that actually helps. But over and above that, it is also up to us to try and learn the language such that we are easy. It's easy actually to communicate. In terms of the other aspect of things, fortunately, in the medical space, I haven't had a situation where someone tried to influence me otherwise.
Well, we're going to talk about that, because I really want to go specifically into the doping aspect as well. But Victor, I want to give you, you heard the questions really from Molele King. Your response to that?
Yes, salam alaikum, kaifar hal, alhamdulillah. I will be going to the north of Africa, so my Arabic is getting better and better all the time. I just wanted to quickly expand more on the issue of language. You know, the first thing, when you meet someone and they break that barrier by speaking your language, your heart opens up to them already. I think everyone will understand what I'm talking about. And I've learned from a very young age in refereeing that I needed to speak French and I needed to speak Arabic. And I've done it for a long time, and it's helped my game. And it's just a pity that many times people can't hear what we say, but we use that as part of our management skills. We speak to the players like that, and it does help. So I hope that answers his question. Going on to his next question regarding what we consider match manipulation. Thanks to SAFA also sent us on numerous courses for this. I'm sitting with a book in front of me. It's from FIFA. It's called Manipulation Guide, and it tells us what to do and how to basically recognize, resist, and report. So we have been taught. We know what to do. We know that these bad things exist all around in all societies and in all industries. So we as referees also have an added responsibility to ensure that the game is not lost, so that people can love the game that we all love so much and not lose faith in it. So it's our duty, and we do have extra responsibility to ensure that the game is fair.
Falaza, I see you there in Klerksdorp. I'm going to come to you in a second. I want to ask you, Victor, and this is, you know, while we're still dealing a lot with the generalities before we get into the real specifics of refereeing and doping, you know, the kind of individualism now that you're responsible for. You as a referee on the pitch with the players that are there, you're hoping that somebody like Thulani has already done his job, make sure that those guys who are on the field are legitimate, that they've gone through the type of hoops that they need to go through, and that you don't have to deal with that on the field, right? How close a relationship is that one actually needs to build between, you know, different entities that go around and that are, in essence, a football match?
Yes, it's critical. I mean, especially in our game, teamwork is very important. The referee doesn't go out there solely on his own. I mean, even with the doctors, we as referees, when it's very hot, we consult with the doctors. You know, we see, I mean, even with the laws of the game, the doctors, Dr. Ngwenya can elaborate further. I mean, they're highly questioned and to try and improve, because our number one priority is players' safety. Yeah. So we always, even when we have our pre-match meeting, there's a doctor and we talk, the doctors, it's a very close network, and it's all for the teamwork. It's very important.
Mm. Yeah, I'm going to ask you the same question.
Yeah, Vic has actually covered some of the aspect, but I'm going to talk about emergencies in football. Mm. You know, you've got emergencies like your concussion, your sudden cardiac arrest. What we have done, and what I can actually proudly say, I've done some workshops even for our South African match officials, where I give a talk on recognizing a medical emergency like your concussion, like your cardiac arrest. And our match officials are now on top of their game. They're able to recognize a medical emergency, and they're able to blow that whistle so that we can get help instantly. Mm. So that relationship is key. And it's important for them to also be able to recognize. And for some reason, it is also important for them to be able to do something, especially when you've got your cardiac arrest, because they are the first respondents. They are there. So if say the medical team is way too far, maybe they are in a remote area where you do not have a medical team, they need to know how to do a CPR, for instance, because when you've got a cardiac arrest, you've got like 3 to 5 minutes to react. If you don't react, then you lose that person. So it is important that you have that constant relationship, that you also teach them, and so that they also understand and they are able to recognize a medical emergencies. Mm.
I don't even want to start talking about, you know, the professionalism of the sport. It needs an absolutely high level of caliber of expertise around it. You know, I mean, when you watch the English league, the amount of play money those guys are paid, you can't be fiddling around not knowing what you're doing when you engage any kind of injury on sport or at that kind of level. If you are refereeing, I'm also assuming, you know, it's unforgivable if you did make some form of mistake, because, you know, television screens are all over the place.
Yeah.
But let's go to Falaza in Klerksdorp first. Falaza, you've got a question?
No, not necessarily, but it is just to comment on your guest there.
Sure.
I think extraordinary information. We are being educated by them. Victor Diamond, I mean, one of the highly respected, I mean, referee. Although at some stage when he was still in the middle of the pack, I thought that he never liked Kaizer Chiefs, you know. Mm. But
I brought him here for you. Falaza, I brought him here for you.
Yeah, you know, him and Daniel Bennett, You know, he was better than Daniel Bennett. I felt that Daniel Bennett was having the agenda against Kaizer Chiefs, you know? Mm. I mean, like, I know I might be very wrong. I might be speculating. I mean, like, because they are also guided by some particular ethics and norms and values, you know?
Mm.
So, yeah, indeed, he was a great referee. And I think the fact that SAFA is utilizing him, I mean, for other important mission, I think it is commendable. Look, I also want to say this, that I want to concur with the speakers who have, I mean, also lamented about the state of our South African football. I think we need to be very blunt. I don't know. I mean, since 1994, someone like Denis Jordan has been in charge of the game in different capacities. I think that the guy is old. I mean, like, he existed in the era of Nelson Mandela. He was young then. But now, for him to continue really to operate within the game, I think if there's anyone who is an antithesis of South African game of soccer, is Denis Jordan. We must not just beat around the bush.
Sure.
And for him to continue to stay over in power, it's also sabotaging, I mean, the kind of the future that South Africa is envisioning, because the guy, he has reached the cul-de-sac. He's got nothing to offer. We need people like John Muyeti there. We need people like Dr. Komalo. Those guys, they are educated. They are not only football brilliant players. They are also prepared, I mean, for the after game. But why are we having the likes of Lucas Kadebe and Mark Fish? I mean, really,
Falaza, you know, for the interest of this interview, you know, it's a statement that you're making that I don't think both gentlemen would be able to elaborate on totally, because
I know.
Yes. So what I'm going to do, and I'm glad you made your point, because we're talking about, you know, football and the sport also. But what I want Falaza, is because you obviously know your sport, you obviously watch the games, you obviously think some referees are biased and some are not. I'm going to do this. Do you have a particular question that you want answered around whether the players go on the field and around doping, whether they haven't taken anything before the game and how they find that out? I'm going to ask you to ask a specific question, but also to the referees and the favoritism and the, you know, whether somebody, you know, can either be I wanted to say influence Gomes. Influence the game, you know.
No, I get you. Look,
ask any question, because obviously you're a big fan.
No, Kaizer Chiefs indeed. Yeah.
So
I want to ask Mr. Victor Diamond.
Yes.
As a referee, are you always, I mean, impartial, or there's a moment where you feel that I love this particular team, this element of being biased against or in favor to a particular team as a human being? Can you break that silence and share with us as to whether it does happen for a referee to support that particular team ahead of that other?
I knew it, because you raised your issue. So let's get it out of the way and get it answered, so that, you know, you watch your sport in peace in future, Brood. And any question around doping, Brood, and players and drugs?
I think they have responded to it, so I may not really, reiterate any question.
Sure. So let's go to...
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Falaza. Victor, I think the question then is to you, Victor.
No problem. First of all, if you allow me, I wanted to bring the gentleman to order. My name is Victor Gomes, not Victor Damon.
Yes, I saw that.
Victor Damon is the top referee. But anyway, I've done my part now in bringing him to order. And just to say that... Yeah, for sure. And just to say that, people are entitled to their opinions and what they think, but... I'm a football lover, and I'm also a family man. I'm a father, I'm an uncle, and I also want to come home to my family and be proud that what I'm doing is correct.
Mm.
And I know that's why I don't support any teams, and it's made my job so much easier. And before, when I'm home, I watch my game and I see where can I improve, because I'm human.
Mm.
And there are times where I see that I've made errors of judgment, and I say to myself,
gosh, how did I get that wrong? And people sometimes don't look at football the way we referees see football. We see it through. We also want to be right. We want to get the penalty decisions right. We want to get the free kicks right. We want to get the yellow cards right. We want to be right. There's nobody who goes to work and says, I'm going to go to work to do wrong things. So I don't see anyone in the right mind going to do the wrong things. And I think when people start seeing that and understanding that, they can also start saying, hey, but why aren't the players taking responsibility? If a player's job is to go and score, every time he goes and he shoots at goal and he misses, now is he terrible?
Mm.
No, it's sport, it's emotional, but we are there. We are football lovers and we are there for the good of the game.
Victor, how do you fix an error? When you say you go back and you sometimes watch and you see, yeah, I made a mistake, an error of judgment, how do you fix it? Or is it just something you live with later on and you say, I just have to do better next time?
The best part about it is I can speak for myself. When you make an honest mistake, people can see it's an honest mistake, or should I say an honest error of judgment.
Mm.
You first say to yourself, why did you get the decision wrong? I was standing in the wrong place. I did not anticipate. I did not run before the kick, etc. Because you know yourself, Mr. Denzel, you've watched TV, and how many times do you use that rewind replay button?
Yes.
And after the third time, you're still confused. You don't know whether there's an offside or not. We've got a split section to make the decision. So it's very difficult. But when we do make an error of judgment, we just try and analyze and see how we can improve. And yeah, we've got to live with it.
Mm. Okay, so now I'm back here in studio. Tulani?
Yes.
Biggest sport in the universe.
Yeah.
Football, biggest sport in the uniform. I don't think it's a contested, space.
100%.
Huge salaries, massive amount of players, huge, amounts of people in stadiums and stuff, money thrown at people. So it's a massive, massive sport comparative to cycling, gymnasts, or any swimming, for example, or any of the others, right? I mean, it's just in a different league of its own.
Yeah.
When you come to doping, however, it's almost minimal. When you've got all of that around football, you hardly hear, some guy somewhere in some league in the big names, Manchester, Chelsea or whoever, Leeds, doping three players, one player, South African. South African players run onto the field every single week, and there is not a report that says, someone couldn't run onto the field this week because, there's a doping incident. Comparative to other sports that show up, so much doping within their sport, gymnasts, for example, cycling, when you look at all of these other things.
Mm.
I'm trying to broadly understand first, before we get to the individual stages, why would that be a phenomena?
Well, I think I just want to start by commending footballers that they love the game and they are professionals.
Mm.
That is why we've got less incidences
What you're saying really is it's footballers themselves are ethics.
Yes. That's the first. That is the first part. But then you can't, because the doping control happens, and it happens quite frequently.
Mm.
And I can tell you now. This last month, I've done almost all the games that are taking place for CAF Confederations and Champions League here in South Africa.
Mm.
There was doping control, and I can tell you now, SAIDS does doping control for almost all our camps at Bafana, and they do doping control quite often now in the league. So we do not have year of cases.
Mm.
Yes, there are cases, but they are very, very minimal. Very, very minimal.
Mm.
That is why you would not hear people talking about doping control or cases of doping control, because the footballers themselves, they love the sport and they are professional and their ethics is on another level.
Mm.
But what we are actually trying to do, we want to make sure that the sport is free and is fair.
Mm. So what kind of, when you say it's quite frequently, what are you looking for in the doping space?
Yeah.
What is it that you begin to look for first?
Yeah.
Before you even assume, doping is happening, whatever.
Yeah.
When you is it urine and blood?
Yeah.
You have to explain this to novices like ourselves who don't do doping.
yeah. So
I love how you're laughing there, Victor.
so most of the time we do urine sampling.
Right.
However, we can actually do blood, but in the World Cup, you do both.
Yeah.
And in CAF, you can actually also do both. But most of the time, we do urine. Now, the way we actually do it, we do random sampling. So, for instance, if there's a game match, Team A versus Team B, during halftime, we do a draw. We put all the players that are playing on the day together with those that are on the bench. And then we put them in sort of a bowl, and then we do a selection, and we select two players randomly. Those players then will be the people.
Two players randomly could come from the same team.
No, it's two from each team.
Okay,
From each team. So two from Team A and two from Team B.
Right.
But the other thing that we can actually do, we can target. So we can actually see, this one keeps on scoring and is scoring quite frequently. Maybe this one keeps on running and running more than the other.
He's 47 years old and he has got more energy than the rest.
So we can actually target as well to say, maybe let us actually test him. Maybe, again, the other thing that we can do, we can target a team to say, this team has been performing like this. Why are they always on a high?
Sundowns, maybe, for example.
I don't want to mention it. Maybe there's something wrong there. But then we can actually target that particular team. We have done that. We have done that in South Africa, and we are continuously doing it. So those are the type of doping controls that we are actually doing. But over and above that, we can actually go to, because players are supposed, or rather any athlete, they are supposed to actually say where they are actually staying and their whereabouts. We can go to your place while you are chilling with family, relaxing, and actually go to test you. What we are testing for? Firstly, we are testing for sports enhancing substances that we can actually find in your system. The other thing that we are testing for, because we are not only focusing on sport enhancements, we are also focusing on health of their players. So we're also looking for recreational drugs that may actually put you in risk, and that may actually cause things like your cardiac arrest. That is why we actually also test for recreational substances in your system.
Doctor, I think we have some competitions when players get red cards. I think they're automatically tested as well.
Yes, you see, the match official has come in. Yes.
Okay, explain that.
So in that case, when you do such an offense, it's not normal for a person to act like that. It's unsporting in nature. So sometimes such people would do such because they are under some sort of influence. That is why we actually need to test them. So for people that have got an automatic record, sometimes we can actually target them and test them.
Thulani, Victor, hold on. Smay in Boksburg, I'm going to take your question immediately after the news. It is 10 o'clock and I have to take the news. We're going to continue the conversation. I've got Victor Gomes with me, FIFA referee, and of course I've got Thulani Ngwenya. Of course, he is doping officer, FIFA. People, we are talking to the world here. We're talking to the world. It is time for the news. It's 10 o'clock. 6 minutes past 10, and of course I have Thulani Ngwenya and Victor Gomes in studio with me. Victor on the phone, Thulani in studio, and of course both are heading to FIFA, but Victor is heading, of course, traveling to Morocco tomorrow for the 2022 CAF Championship League final on the 30th of May, which is in a few days' time, and we'll speak to that, of course, now. Victor, I'm going to bring you straight into the conversation. Something I want to ask you before I go to Smay in Boksburg. Refereeing is a full-time entity, not? Is there something you have to, you know, do in the meantime while you wait for games? How does this work? Are there full-time referees, or is it something that actually you do as a passion and in your spare time? I just need to get that question out of the way.
Yeah, locally, it's we most referees don't have other jobs. They are just referees, and then there are also many that are teachers and stuff.
Yeah.
Personally, myself, I own two businesses, and refereeing is my passion, and we make it work.
Okay. I'm going to go to Smay in Boksburg. Smay, you have a question.
Hi, Denzel.
Yes, sir.
Sure, but firstly, I want to concur with Falaza about being bias of Victor on Chiefs game. Hey, Mr. Victor, hey, I can mention like in plenty of games. Hey, Norlo, my baba,
you are not recognized.
Victor is blowing his whistle, Chief. He's red carding.
Okay, actually, my question is about the VAR or how it's like to implement the VAR on our PSL football.
Yeah.
Maybe if it's too much expensive, you can speak to Power FM. Maybe they can sponsor you guys.
Well, he was suggesting earlier on what radio presenters earn. So, Smay, thanks a lot for that, Victor. It's a question I needed to ask you as well. Technology in the game. When you were talking about, you know, the errors, of course, that get made, and technology has come into play. And technology has played a huge difference. You know, in the beginning, I thought that I saw some resistance to technology, but you know, even from you know, CAF and or FIFA, technology eventually creeps into the space, and then it becomes part of the game and is a natural like a third arm of that you need then to utilize within that space. Has technology come on and made it so much easier for you, as he's asking about the VAR?
You know, Denzel, thanks. The VAR question, it's a show on its own. It's a discussion on its own. But I think to try and summarize it as quickly as possible, it's to say that VAR is here to help.
Yeah.
It is the future. It is the way forward. And I just think there's a big misconception amongst general footballers or football-loving people out there. I think they don't understand the concept of VAR. Mm. It's not for a right or wrong decision, but there's some protocols that need to be followed. And also, what I love personally about VAR is that the referee on the field is the referee that makes the decision.
Mm.
People are under the impression that the referee in the cabin behind the TV is the one that says to the referee on the field, hey, Mr. Referee, you must change your decision to penalty.
Mm.
It's not. There are protocols that need to be followed. And it's literally, to sum it up so that people can understand, it's like your CCTV cameras where you can say, hey, my friend, come and have a look at the camera again and you're going to see for yourself and make your decision.
My question to you is it your prerogative to choose? When and what for VAR to choose whether the technology comes into play or not, is it part of the game where it's almost something that you have to utilize when there is a question that's or a decision that's questionable?
Okay, so I don't want to hog the microphone, but
no,
I'm going to go in depth a little bit so that you have a clear perspective.
Yeah.
There are four protocols for VAR: are mistaken identity, goals, red cards, and penalty area incidents.
Mm.
So that means in those four incidences, VAR must check. So I'm going to give you an example.
Right.
I'm on the field. I'm the referee. I now give a decision. I see something in the penalty area, and I say, no handball. The ball touched his chest, and it went out for a corner.
Mm.
The VAR operator behind seeing it checks, and if the ball touches his chest, he will just say, check complete, all okay.
Mm.
If he then sees that the ball, in fact, touches his hand, he then says, Mr. Referee, before the play stopped, that is when you'll see sometimes a referee will hold his hand to his ear and will hold the signal,
mm.
which means before that you restart, they are just checking something, a silent, what we call a silent check.
Mm.
And he will then say to the referee, Mr. Referee, I recommend an on-field review. because I've got a possible penalty for a possible penalty for handball. Mm. When I go to the screen, he's going to prepare images for me to see that the ball, in fact, did not touch his chest. It touched his arm, and therefore give me a second chance to make a different decision or stay with my decision. Mm. But there are many times where what we call interpretation. Interpretation is when we sit around the table, we all see a decision, and some say foul, some say no foul, and it becomes an interpretational issue. Now, had the referee seen the handball and said, I saw the ball touch the hand, it's not, in my opinion, it's not a handball, and carry on. There, the VAR would then say, check complete, because the ball did touch the hand. He's saying, yes, Mr. Referee, you did see it. Okay, fine, let's carry on. So that's where the misconception is amongst the general public. Mm. In, for example, mistaken identity, if I caution the wrong player, I don't have to go to the screen where even Mr. Denzel can see, hey, Gomez, you gave a yellow card to number 7. It's in fact number 9. That is anyone. You put anyone behind that screen, they will tell you the same thing. It's not interpretation. It's what we call, it's a factual decision. Mm. For example, you don't see a referee. You'll see it very seldom. When a goal is scored, they show you the lines on TV at home, what we call the program, they show you. You don't see the referee going to the screen and changing his decision because now it's offside. You just see the referee doing the decision on the field saying, okay, according to VAR, this is a factual decision, we're changing it, it's no longer a goal, it's an offside. There is only one time on an offside where it's a decision that needs to be made by a referee where did the player touch the ball or was it played? There's an interpretational issue. And that's when the referee can go to the VAR, to the referee's review area and check. There are even times where he will call his first assistant because it's an offside specialist who can show him and help him in terms of offside. So I think it's important that if you want to know more about VAR, you need to understand the protocols and why it's done like that. For example, if there's a punch that nobody saw and play is continuing, and after 2 minutes we didn't see it in the cabin, for example, we've got a program TV there and we see a replay of a punch, we can call the referee and say, Mr. Referee, I recommend you stop the game immediately. I need you to come and see this image. And for that, the referee can stop the game at any time and go and see the image and come back and award a red card.
Okay. Well, you heard it
within the protocol.
You heard it here on Power 98.7, Victor Gomes explaining VAR. And if you didn't know now, Kaizer Chiefs fans, there you go, Kaizer Chiefs fans.
Let's go into the cost factor. I think this will be very interesting. So I think it's pretty similar to rugby. But in terms of cost, I think each unit is about 2.5 million rand.
Whoa.
Purchased. Wow. But I am aware that there are companies that hire this equipment out. But now you need to look at the logistics. If you have it in a league, you have to have it on all the matches, whether there's TV or no TV, to be consistent. Because it's no use you just having one VAR team for an A team versus B team. You need it in that whole league. And I am aware that these are things that the powers that be are working towards. So it's not just the 2.5 million. You've got 8 teams running. So, I mean, well, the 16 teams, you've got 8 games. And then you don't just need the 8, because sometimes it's different cities. And that specific truck cannot get to that other city in time for the next game on the next day or whatever. So you need additional trucks or facilities, you know. So it's a huge logistical problem, which I do believe that they are working towards.
Wow, yeah. Victor, that's wow. A learning curve for me too. Let's come back to studio here. You were on the urine and the blood.
Yes.
Are you looking for something or in both of those elements?
Yeah.
Can you find the same thing when you're looking for doping?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is urine the fast test and blood is the more in-depth test.
Yeah.
So blood will tell you in a more advanced way the kind of advanced kind of drugs that are being used, but so what's the difference there quickly? In essence,
no. Well, blood is quite advanced. In urine, remember everything that you take in goes through your kidney and then is filtered through your kidney and then it's excreted through your urine. But with blood, there's also blood doping. Remember, there's some people that will actually put blood take blood, it's called blood doping, put some elements of blood, I don't want to go in detail with medical terms, put some elements of blood and they put it via the drip inside their system. And in that way, because of the blood that they put in their system, it gives them that blood content that carries oxygen. And then because of the more oxygen content in their system, then they are able to actually have added advantage over the other, because then they've got more oxygenated blood circulating in the system. Yes, the blood is a little bit advanced, but in urine you can pick up quite a number of things as compared to actually the blood.
So in the break we were talking about a few drugs. Let's go through that and briefly just tell us the kind of things that they do.
Yeah, well, there's quite a number of drugs that we actually test for. They are in categories, and there's substances that are banned that can actually that help you to actually run fast. There's substances that help you just to bulk up. There's substances that help you to have a very the endurance to be actually high, and there's substances that are banned that actually masks the substance that actually gives you advantage. If we pick up that you have, for instance, Lasix. Lasix is a drug that is used for hypertension. And if you are an elite athlete, you found to actually be using Lasix and you haven't applied for a therapeutic use exemption, you actually, it's a doping violation. You test positive. But then there's some cases, like for instance, when people have got asthma, they're using asthma pump. And with the asthma pump, you've got prednisone in it. Prednisone is a banned substance. And if you pick prednisone in your urine, then you're actually, it's doping violation. Then it's a banned substance. You can actually be suspended, or rather you can be suspended for 2, 4 or so many years.
I was about to ask this.
Yeah.
When is it allowed to have certain substances then in your system?
Yeah.
And that's particularly when you have a medical condition.
Yeah.
Hypertension, yeah. Yes. And asthma, for example.
Yes, yes, yes. Because I'm just making an example, because asthma is quite common. We've seen quite a number of athletes with asthma that are playing with asthma. But now, the health of the athlete comes first. So it is important that when you've got a condition like asthma, you apply for what we call therapeutic use exemption. And then when you apply, you have to send your results that are actually showing that you have been diagnosed of asthma, and these are the investigations that have been done. And then when that is actually done, there has to be an options, because you know when you are a doctor, there's different medication that you can actually give to an athlete for a particular condition. So you have to exhaust all the other options that actually are not banned, that are not banned substances. So they look if you have exhausted all these other options, or rather if that banned substances is the only option that you can actually take to actually be able to save or to address that particular condition. So all those things are actually looked at when you're applying for a therapeutic use exemption.
We're beginning to round up the conversation with about 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
COVID.
Yeah.
COVID came, took the game away, and we had to bring it back. And you would have been at the forefront of something like COVID in the medical space to make sure that we come back in a safe way.
Yeah.
Just briefly take us into that space.
Well, that conversation actually makes me to have mixed emotions, because at some point I received life threatening calls and but it was all done because of the love and passion for football. So
people would have thought that you're the person.
I'm the stumbling block.
You're the gatekeeper.
Yes. In fact, at some point they were thinking that Safa is using me to actually stop football from playing, but it was not like that. It was because of the passion and why and the importance of protecting the people that are the footballers themselves. So I don't want
but in this instance you would have also needed to protect those who come into the crowd. I mean,
They are your responsibility also.
Everyone that is in football, because I'm a doctor, everyone that is in the football space is my responsibility. SAFA appointed me to be the compliance officer because the government said each and every federation needs to have a compliance officer. And as a compliance officer, then I was playing a leading role in terms of making sure that we put together protocols. And when the protocols were put together, I need to give credit to the other doctors that assisted, because the other doctors that were also in the forefront are your doctors from the PSL, from the clubs, and doctors from rugby, doctors from cricket. We put together quite a comprehensive protocol that was FIFA said it was one of the best protocols, because we are the first country in Africa to play football within a pandemic, and we really need to take credit for that. And the protocols that we put together was also used by COSAFA to play their own games, and they play about 11 competitions and with the same almost the same tokens, because they appointed me to oversee their games as well. And some of these other protocols were used to be to design the protocol for CAF, and I can say that proudly. And that means that South Africa is blessed. South Africa has got so much talent. We can't really look down on ourselves, and that has been one of our turning points in South Africa, and especially in sports and exercise medicine.
Victor, I'm going to come to you. Match fixing in the South African context, is it something that you've bumped into prevalent? It's on the sidelines, or it's not something you've bumped into, but you know about it?
No, that's really, I have no comment on it. I mean, I'm not aware of any of that.
So it's not something that you even aware of that's happening in the South African space. So not relevant in any way.
That's correct.
When you hear of Thulani speak of the COVID phase, I mean, obviously you would have been impacted as well, passionate for the game. Was there at some point when you had mixed feelings about when do we come back, when don't we come back, when there are spectators in the stadiums, or is there sort of an acceptance of the protocols that are in front, that this is how it's going to play out? I mean, we're still in COVID. We still have COVID regulations that govern, the games and aspects of the games. So how is that impacting? And in your perspective, what's your views on it?
No, that gentleman or that doctor that you've got sitting in front of you is very modest. And what he was saying earlier, he downplays. He doesn't know, or he knows, he just doesn't say it. The bubble that we started went around the world, and really it was all under his control with him and his team. And at no point did we ever feel. I remember the first week we as referees had to go into a bubble, hotel staff, everything. I mean, it was really, and when you've got a doctor like that and he comes and he spends time with us and he explains, they have a chat with us and he explains the process, you feel fine. I mean, today we're sitting basically past 2 years in the pandemic, and today I'm on 72 COVID tests. I've taken 72 COVID tests.
Wow.
Yeah, so what people don't understand is for like on international matches, we travel, we take a PCR test before we travel, we take a PCR test before the game, and sometimes to come back, we have to take another PCR test. So, they obviously have the studies out, and they've ensured that the safety of officials and people involved, from the drivers to anyone who's at field level, is all COVID negative. So, it's something that, yes, in the beginning we were all scared because of the unknown, but after that it was just, man, we miss the noise, we miss the vuvuzelas. That's the only thing that we miss.
And you would make that phone call and say, come on, man, we need to get back. as we begin to end the conversation, Victor, it's a casual question, but I suppose it's serious as well to you. Players get tested. You've just spoken about how many COVID tests you've done. Doping incidences and referees. And referees get tested too. Let's just, is there an understanding that happens?
Yes, we get tested at various times of the season. I go for ECG tests. I mean, I've even gone to doctor. He's assisted me many times. We have what we call the pre-tournament doctor. What's that name they use?
Pre-competition medical assessment, PCMA.
Hey, that's what I was looking for. That's one way they hook you up on everything. Yeah, we get tested. We do eye tests. We do. It's a big process. People think that it's very simple, but it's not. We go through many, many tests, fitness tests. We do get tested.
Oh, brilliant. So let's come back to studio now as we round up the conversation. Big deal, FIFA. Let's just go back to, and Victor, I'll raise it with you as well, and the game that you're going to be officiating in. It's really, we started off by saying it's really, really a big deal. You know, I mean, you're representing the world, actually, because this is not continental. Yeah. This is the world.
I'm quite honored. I'm really, really privileged, that I'm given such an opportunity to represent the world, because I'm one of the six doctors that are going to be there doing doping control. It is a huge honor. And for me, I'm really, really taking it as a privilege. And I thank SAFA for also giving me an opportunity, because without SAFA, I wouldn't be where I am, actually. Mm. So I'm quite honest.
Mm. Victor, this match and then FIFA, I started off with the question and talking about, you know, and a big deal, and my producer has just sent me something here saying SAFA produces FIFA representatives Victor Gomez or Victor Gomes, Zakele Siwela, Akona Makalima, Dr. Tulani Ngwenya, and of course Dr. Patrice Motsepe, FIFA Vice President. I mean, from a country like ours, you know, it's really something, right? I mean, shaking up the world a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I started the conversation today, earlier this evening, saying that we represent that flag, we represent our continent, we represent our families, and we represent our association, you know, CAF. So it is a big thing. People, I think the last time I was told from a refereeing perspective, I think there was something around 4,000 referees around the world. Mm. And if you think how many referees go to a World Cup, you know, it's long work, it's lots of dedication, and it's our passion. And you know, we are so happy to represent. Now at CAF level, we put our name on our jerseys. Our director has come up with a new philosophy. We put our name on the back of our jerseys with our country flag. I mean, it's so proud to see that I have a South African flag on the back of my jersey as a referee.
Mm. Victor Gomes, thank you so much for joining me here on Power 98.7 tonight. And I've learned so much, and I think the callers too and the listeners will have learned so much from you as well. And you know, the next time you're on a pitch with Kaizer Chiefs, I'm going to be watching you closely, man. I'm going to be just for what I've heard on this particular radio station in the last hour and a half. But listen, on a serious note, thank you very much. Thank you, and good luck tomorrow. Travel safe. Do us proud, and I know you'll do us proud. There are no South Africans in the final, and that's a pity, you know. And someday we will be flying that flag there. And the problem is, and just answer me this quickly, right? If there were a South African team in the final, you would not have been invited.
I will be watching from home, like you.
Yes, because it would that have been a stipulation?
Yes. So what normally happens in tournament stages is when the team goes through, like at quarters, then the referees start going home at tournament stage. So it's the same principle in these competitions.
All right. Victor Gomez, well done. Good luck, and do us proud, and travel safe, and we'll talk to you when you come back.
Thank you very much.
That's Victor Gomes. Tulani, you're in studio here. Well, an honor, Chief. You know, I mean, to be in the position that you are, representing us where you are, and an absolute big deal. Mm-hmm. One of a few people, you know, that get to do this, that get called upon to do this. You know, we're not far into our democracy. Our sport in this continent, equivalent to what's happening in the world, relatively small. You know, when you watch football, African football, compared to, you know, what's going on with the big money and the big games, and where football is really, really massive. Yep. For one of our own to be called, that's impressive.
It is quite huge. It is huge. And I still can't believe it, you know. When I start thinking about it, I actually have developed goosebumps because it's really, really huge. It's a huge responsibility. It is a huge honor. I mean, to get global recognition, it is really, really huge. A boy from the dusty streets of Kanyamazane, who would have thought going all the way to the World Cup. And it's quite a big...
Is it a first?
Yeah.
For you? Is it a first for you?
Yeah. Well, it's my first World Cup. Yeah, it's my first World Cup. So it is indeed the first. And it is a huge thing. It is big because I'm the only one in Africa.
Well, thank you for bringing that story here to Power 98.7, Brur. And congratulations and well done. And do us proud.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.